up to 16th and 17th chapter. Maybe you're there from the reading. That is where we're going to spend our entire evening in the text, so you won't have to turn from anywhere in that. You know, there were some times where things just kind of happened coincidentally or not by coincidence. I don't know exactly how to do it, but I've been going through some of the kings and looking for phrases about this king walked in the manner of his father David in particular. Because that statement is used several times as we've been thinking about the church as a family, how God expects us to be like father, like son. And how the kings in particular were talked about as following in the footsteps of their father David or their father Ahab or whatever the case, meaning that they lived like their fathers did, right? Or he did not walk in the steps of his father, but in the steps of so on and so forth. And so, it just so happened that I was talking to Mom, and Mom was like, oh, did you see David Maxson's daily devotional today? And I was like, no, I didn't. She's like, well, I'll send it to you. Well, lo and behold, it was a statement here from 2 Kings chapter 17, and so it just kind of worked coinciding, and I was like, you know what, I think I'll go ahead and preach that, even though this is more of a probably Sunday morning lesson. I think as you see as we get to the end, that maybe it's actually more of a Sunday night audience lesson. Because normally we think of the Sunday morning audience being those that are here one time a week. That's all that they're here. Sunday night, if you're here, it probably means you come more than once a week, and you're probably here a lot, right? So that means you got some kind of some going, right? Well, what we're going to see is, that's all great, and that's all good, but we're even going to see that in 2 Kings 17. So let me tell you what we're going to see in 2 Kings 17. In 2 Kings 17, we're going to see a summary statement of Israel, the northern 10 tribes. We're going to see a summary statement of Judah, the southern 2, but really one tribe, and Benjamin thereabouts. So we'll see a summary of the southern tribe, and we'll see a summary of the nations, okay? And what we're going to see in those summaries is what it says and how they walked, okay? And then, at the end of the chapter, we will get to see an up-to-date view on Israel and an up-to-date view on the nations. Because as Corey read for us in verse 21 and verse 22, you have Israel being removed from their land by the king of Assyria into Assyria in this chapter, okay? And so, the very last verse of the chapter says, and to this day, meaning at the time of the writing of 2 Kings. And when that is, I don't know. That's not the point. But what you'll see is the point in a moment is that what you see is a cycle of influence in 2 Kings 17. I didn't know what to call this lesson. You know, sometimes you have a lesson, you don't know what to call it, or sometimes you have a sermon and you don't know how to preach it. Well, I feel like I knew how to preach the sermon. I just didn't know what to call the thing. So I'm calling it a cycle of influence, and I think that will make sense as we go through especially these summary statements. So let's jump right in. I don't have time to read the entire text, but what I'm going to do is I'm just going to give you a summary of the way the chapter begins. We learn about why Israel, the northern tribes, were taken away. And here's statements that you see. You can look in verse 2, or verse 7. Let's start in verse 7 there. You can see in verse 7 that they had feared other gods. I want us to read that text very closely, verse 7. So this occurred because the people of Israel had sinned against Jehovah their God, or the Lord their God. We need to stop right there for a second. We're going to see this, and you know that that is the name of God. That, if you got it in your text, the capital L-O-R-D. That's Jehovah. That would have been how the nations would have looked at the God of Israel. His name would have been Jehovah or Yah or however you would say that, okay? Just like the God of the Philistines, their God's name would have been so on, Dagon. It would be an example of one. That was a Philistine God. So when you read the word the Lord, we think the Lord. They would have thought Jehovah, the name of Israel's God. And rightfully so, because that is the way in which that name is used. So read this as a name, not as a person, if that makes sense. So we're reading through, they had sinned against Jehovah, their God. And I'm going to use that throughout the text instead of the Lord their God. That way we understand that it is a name, is it a person in which they are going against. So they had sinned against Jehovah their God, and that had brought them out, and they had feared other gods. Remember from the Ten Commandments when he brought them out of Egypt? In Exodus chapter 20 with the Ten Commandments, thou shalt have no other gods before me, you shall not bow, you shall not make any graven images, and you shall not fear them. All of those things are included, and he would make a covenant with them that they should fear him. But when they didn't fear him, they feared other gods. They, and you might be say, fear is afraid. Yeah. Fear is also respect. It is reverence. They did not respect him, but they revered other gods. Say Dagon. Say Molech. Say Chemosh. They had respect and reverence for those other gods. And we're going to see as well as Jehovah. They just saw him as one of the others. But I want you to notice this phrase that is repeated throughout. Notice in verse 8, you see it the first time. And they walked in the customs of the nations whom Jehovah drove out before the people of Israel. Notice it down in verse 11. That 11, they made offerings on the high places as the nations did whom Jehovah carried away. And then verse 15, they despised his statutes and his covenants that he made with their fathers, and the warnings that he gave them, and they went after false idols, and they became false, and they followed the nations that were around them concerning whom Jehovah had dealt with. That statement is used throughout to say Israel was influenced by the nations that they were supposed to remove. They worshiped their gods, and they would go on to list some of their gods that they went after. They feared these gods. So verse 8, back in the chapter, they set up high places to worship these gods. So they would worship on the high places. And the verse that Corey referenced in verse 9, they did secretly against Jehovah. I often wonder what that meant. Did they try to hide their sin from God and why they built them in the high places? In the trees, oftentimes is called in the groves? Or was it that they were worshiping the trees? I don't know what it means that they did secretly against Jehovah. But I lend to think that they were trying to hide their worship of these other idols whom they feared and respected in front of God. I don't know the answer to that, but that is what they did. They did it secretly. So it wasn't something that they were openly proud of, so to speak, right? It was something that they were trying to keep a little bit in a closet. And you would see in verse 8 the statement that is made. They did wicked things. Or verse 11, they did wicked things, which provoked Jehovah to anger. Like, they just kept adding and adding. And then verse 13 and verse 14, that this is a big problem that they had. So, yet, Jehovah warned Israel and Judah by every prophet and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes in accordance with all the law that I commanded your fathers, that I sent you by my servants the prophet. Even though they were being provoked, they were provoking Jehovah to anger, Jehovah was still sending people to him saying, hey, turn from your ways. Come back to the covenant. But Israel and Judah would not listen. So verse 14, they would not listen, but were stubborn as their fathers had been stubborn. They wouldn't listen. They were stubborn just like their forefathers in the wilderness. Just like their forefathers taking into Canaan. They were stubborn. They were in the same mold. And so verse 15, they despised his statutes and covenants. And again, when we see the word despise, don't think they hated. They looked down upon. They belittled his statutes and covenants. What he said to do was not important. It did not matter. They looked down on it. And as we talked about this morning, they scoffed at it. They belittled those things. How? Verse 15. The things that their fathers had done. They didn't care about the covenant that he had made with their fathers. It meant nothing to them. They looked down upon that very special covenant. They just counted it as nothing. It was just regular old half. And so verse 16, because they didn't see it as anything, notice what they did. They abandoned all the commandments of Jehovah, their God. But, yep, if I don't like this one, and I'm going to belittle this one, well then why am I going to hold on to this one? Now, what's the point of that, right? So finally you come to the realization, like, why am I spending all this time making these sacrifices and getting this money if I'm not going to do this and I understand that it's kind of useless? So guess what you do? You forget it altogether. You just abandon it, you walk right away from it altogether, and so that's what they did. And so they made for themselves metal images, two calves. Remember when they did that? When they split from the southern tribe and Jeroboam becomes the king, and he's like, hold on, I can't have these people going back down to Jerusalem. So what I need to do is I need to set up a feast that is like the one in Judah. And so here's what I'll do. I'll set up golden calves in the north and in the south in Dan and Beersheba or Bethel, wherever it was. I forgot right now off the top of my head. But in the north and the south, and so it'll be easy on the people. They don't even have to go down to Jerusalem, and so they'll stay in. So guess what Israel did? They did that. There were very few that actually went down to Jerusalem. And we see that in actually in the days of Hezekiah, because Hezekiah goes up and calls them, and some from Hezekiah came right on down. And so you have all these different things that are taking place. You've got some awful things happening. So they abandoned it, as we said. And then you'll notice the disgusting thing that they did in verse 17, that they burned their sons and their daughters as offerings, and they used divination and omens and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of Jehovah, provoking Him to anger. They sacrificed their children. They practiced witchcraft and sorceries. That was what they went after. That was what they did. And that angered Jehovah, their God. And so, what did He do? He 18, therefore Jehovah was very angry with Israel, and He removed them out of His sight, and none was left but the tribe of Judah alone. That was a very dark picture. That was a dark time going on in Israel. So He had to remove them from His sight. I want you to think about how mad God must be to remove you from His sight. Like, what did He do before that? He sent prophet after prophet after prophet saying, turn. And what did they do? They would not listen. They abandoned. They despised. They did not care. And so finally, He had to remove them from His sight. And so where did they go? Assyria. Question. Could God not see them in Assyria? Obviously He could, right? You understand what He's saying. You're not staying in my land anymore. This is my land, not your land. You think this land is special because it's Israel. The only reason it's special is because I gave it to you. You get out of here. And so it is not their place anymore. But it all starts that they walked in the customs of the nations. Now notice the summary statement of Judah. Judah alone was left. Now notice verse 21. So when He had torn Israel from the house of David, so it goes back to the very beginning of that split of the nation into the 10 tribes and the 2. So when He had done that, they made Jeroboam the son of Nebat king. And Jeroboam drove Israel. And I've skipped down to the wrong verse. Go to verse 19. Sorry. I skipped down the wrong verse. So Judah also did not keep the commandments of Jehovah their God. But what did they do? They walked in the customs that Israel had introduced. You see the influence right there? Israel walked based off of the influence and the customs of the nations. And who did Judah walk after? Israel. So where's the influence coming back to? We're back to the nations, aren't we?
We're all intertwined now. It's like we don't know where it's coming from, but yet they're all being influenced by one another. And they go through this, and so they also did not do. And so verse 20, they, the Lord, Jehovah, rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them into the hand of plunderers until he cast them out of his sight. Now, I'm not sure if verse 20 is including Israel and Judah as we know it together as all of Israel. Because we do know that what eventually happens with Judah. They are also removed from his sight to Babylonian captivity, right? But it seems as me, probably with the way the language is used, that he turns his attention back to the northern tribes here. But he's letting us know that as bad as it was in Israel, Israel had also affected Judah. From the very beginning, Judah was being influenced by their brothers who had gone off the deep end. And so you keep going in the text. Now let's see about the nations. So you get down in verse 29. I want you to see a summary statement of the nations. But every nation still made gods of its own, and it put them in shrines of the high places that the Samaritans had made. Every nation's in the cities in which they lived. You see, every nation was doing its own thing. They each had their own god, or they had their own gods, and they each had cities that their god dwelt in. Well, didn't Israel and Judah have that as well? What makes them any different? They all have their own god. What makes your god any better than our god? Right? Well, obviously, the things in which God is able to do. But you will notice that verse 32, that though they did this, and you could see all the different nations that are talked about here, but verse 32, they also feared Jehovah. And they appointed among themselves all sorts of people as priests of the high places who sacrificed for them in the shrines of the high places. So they feared Jehovah. What? The nations feared Jehovah. They appointed priests for the high places. Hold on, I thought Israel had high places. Well, guess what? So the nations. Guess who was offering? Guess who they're offering sacrifices to? Jehovah in the high places. And they also feared Jehovah. What? And they served their gods. And I want you to know this very carefully. Verse 33. They feared Jehovah, but also served their own gods after the manner of the nations from among whom they had been carried away. We say, who are these people? Well, these people that he's talking about in verses 29 and following are people that are moved to Israel that have been taken captive by Assyria. See, the Assyrians took Israel into Assyria. And then the king of Assyria sent other people that he had conquered back to Israel to live there. And those people are the ones that are said, they made their own gods, but yet they feared Jehovah. But yet they made their own gods. And why did they do that? Because that is what the people in which they lived did. Well, who was the people in which they lived there? Israel. You see that, right? Israel has got a huge impact on why even the nations fear Jehovah. It's because of wicked Israel. Well, how in the world do we get there? That's lesson number two. That's part number two. I want to ask a question before we go any further. Who am I influenced by? Who are you influenced by? Right? We see in all three of these cases, these nations are influenced by other nations. As individuals, we are influenced by other individuals. We're influenced by other groups of people, quite frankly, right? And all of these, they were influenced. No one can say they were independent of one another and the other didn't have an effect on them, right? And so I have to ask myself, what am I being influenced by? Or who am I being influenced by, right? As God's children, what do you think, or who do you think we should be influenced by? You might say, God's people. Okay, that could be a good answer. Was Israel God's people? Were they necessarily a good influence? No. Who do you think we should be influenced by? How about God Himself, right? What about Romans chapter 8 and verse 14? As children of God, you are led by the Spirit. Now that doesn't mean you are miraculously led by the Spirit. That means what you are using as your guiding principles and the things in which you determine right or wrong, you use God's Spirit, the Spirit of God, whether it be by Scripture, whether it be by teaching, whether it be by whatever the case might be. You're not caring so much and you're not following after the manner of the nations or the manner of Israel or the manner of the Church of Christ. But you are following after the manner of Christ, of God. I gotta tell you, I wonder sometimes if we're really more influenced by God or if we're more influenced by man. I think it's probably obvious that we are more influenced by man. And all it takes is one person in the name of God or in the name of Christ who influences us, and we don't double check and we don't go to God's Word about that. All it takes is that, and then I'm okay with what I'm doing. And the next thing you know, I'm influencing somebody else, and they're now doing the thing, and they're now doing the thing, and here we go. Now we got this big watered down and convoluted mess. Why? Because we despise the commandments of God, or we just altogether abandon them. We don't think that they're important. We would rather do this, or we just don't pay attention. And so we're being so influenced from outside sources. Well, as we talked about this morning in Michael's lesson, it's not good to be isolated, right? But it is good to be isolated from the fact of, hey, the biggest influence in my life better be what does God say about that? Not what do we at this church say about that? Right? That's a big difference. Or what does the Church of Christ teach about this? How many of you have asked that question or you heard that question? Who cares what the Church of Christ teaches about that? Who cares what the Baptist Church teaches about that? What does God teach about that? That's what we're trying to do. And guess what happened in Israel? They taught the law. They just didn't follow the law. That's an interesting thing, right? And that is a dangerous thing to teach it, but not follow it. A lot to what Michael's been talking about in several weeks prior. But now, what we dealt with, and even in that summary statement of the nations, it was after Israel was removed. And here's our second part of the lesson. Is that after Israel was removed, and Assyria brought the other nations into Israel. I want you to notice what happens there. Pick up with me back in verse 24. So we have all the list of these nations in which they had done. He places them there in verse 24. So notice verse 25. So at the beginning of their dwelling there, they did not fear Jehovah. Therefore, and I want you to, we'll stop right there for a second. So remember how we saw our summary a moment ago? The summary was, they feared Jehovah, right? The introductory statement is, when they first lived there, they did not fear Jehovah. Until what? Verse 25. The Lord sent lions among them and killed some. Do what? Who did what? To what? Who? God sent lions, Jehovah sent lions to these people so that they would do what? Fear Him. Guess who got the message? The king of Assyria got the message. He says in verse 26, the nations that you have carried away and placed in the cities of Samaria, they do not know the law of the God of the land. Like he understood the reason why this was happening is there's a God there and we don't know what to do with this God. So what do you do? Well, they had an old priest come back. Look down now in verse 27. So the king commanded, send there one of the priests whom you carried away from there, and let him go and dwell there and teach them the law of the God of the land. So guess what they do? They send the priest down. Priest goes back. Priest is teaching the law of Jehovah to them. And so one of the priests, verse 28, who had been carried away from Samaria, came and he lived in Bethel, and he taught them how they should fear Jehovah. And so guess what they did? Verse 32. They also feared Jehovah. But guess what the verses are, as we mentioned a moment ago, 29 through 31. Guess who they also feared? Their own gods. Jehovah was just another god. And so even though they had been taught to fear Jehovah, were they taught that Jehovah was the only God? They were not taught He was the only God, but these are also. Because could that priest of Israel come in and say, the only God that they worship was Jehovah? No, man. They had all their others. They had the golden calves. They had all these other things. It didn't matter. But I do find it interesting that the king of Assyria is like, we got a problem, and the problem is with their God. And he was right, wasn't he? And the help that they got, did it really help them? They were converted, weren't they? They feared Jehovah, but did they change? No, they didn't, because they still offered the same sacrifices that they did before. So what's our update on Israel? Our update on Israel is down in verse 34. So, to this day, they do not do according to the former manner. Let me try that again. To this day, they do according to the former manner. They do not fear Jehovah. They do not follow the statutes or the rules or the law of the commandment that was the Lord Jehovah commanded the children of Jacob, whom he named Israel. They just don't do it. So even after they were removed from his sight, you would think they would get the correction. To use our term from class, right? They didn't get the correction. They still didn't fear it. They still didn't follow him. They did not care, nor did they remember the covenant in which he had made with their father. They had completely forgot it. And so as you would see in verse 40, however, they would not listen. And what did they do? They did according to their former manner. Did Israel know about Jehovah and about what Jehovah would do to them? Did they know about what Jehovah had promised them of all the good? Yeah, it will be well with you. Did that make a hill of beans to them? Zero. Did the prophets coming and warning them of the destructions make a hill of difference? No. Didn't matter to them. They still walked as a whole exactly how they always had. So guess what? They're done. They are removed from his sight, and they don't come back because they do not change. They still do the same. So what about our nations? What's the up-to-date moment on the nations? Notice the last verse of the chapter, verse 41. So these nations feared Jehovah, and they also served carved images. Their children did likewise, and their children's children, as their fathers did, so they do to this day. Do you see what just happened? They did exactly as their fathers had done. They feared Jehovah. But they still served all the other gods. They still feared all the other gods as well. Even though they had been taught about Jehovah and they respected They just held him in the same respect as they did everyone else, even to this day. You understand how the cycle of influence is going here? Remember how we started with all of this? Israel walked after the nations. Judah walked after Israel. Boom, here we are right back to it, right? Then the nations come to Israel. Lions get sent. They realize we don't know the law of God. So they ask for a priest. The priest comes in, teaches them about the law of God. Then they fear the Lord. They fear Jehovah. But they walk exactly like the people that converted them walk. And the Lord is not happy with that. And guess who walks after that? Their children walk after that. And their grandchildren walk after that. Do you see the point? The point is very simple. If I'm wrong at all in my influence, that can lead somebody very far astray. And I don't even really recognize that I am leading someone so far away. Especially if I'm not paying attention to myself right at the beginning, right? So we're back to our question. Do I even know the law or the laws of God? You see, the Assyrians that brought them in, they didn't know the law of Moses. But they said, we need to know this law. And guess what? They were taught the law. Was that a good thing? Yeah. Is it a good thing to know your Bible? Is it a good thing to be able to quote book, chapter, verse? Right. Is that what it's all about? It's not about knowing, is it? It's not about how much knowledge do I have. Notice the phrase that was used over and over. The manner and the customs. Or as they walked, as their fathers walked. It is about the actions in which an individual takes. It's not about the knowledge or the respect that someone gets. You can give someone respect all day long to their face and not do what they say, can't you? Your honor, and then you go back and you bad talk them. Or you do whatever the case, like you can show someone that. So it's not about knowing, so good work. Or maybe we're like those people that don't know and say, you know what, I need to be taught more. Because I don't know what's right, I don't know what's wrong, I think this is right, I think this is wrong, but I'm not sure. Well, guess what, it's okay if you're at that point in life where you need to learn more. But when we learn, it's not about just knowing and just learning, right? So that's one question. Second question is, well, okay, now that I know more about Him, do I fear Him? Well, you would think that if someone actually comes to understand that the person in which they are learning about created heavens and the earth. He made all nations out of one man. He destroyed the world, but He saved eight people. He chose a special nation. He did all these things. He sent His Son to die, all these things. Would you respect someone who does that? Absolutely, if you come to believe that. You would respect them and be like, man, that's really amazing. That is great. Well, guess what? Congratulations. Good job. But the question that follows is that what it's all about? Just knowing the laws and just fearing the Lord is not what it's all about, is it? Didn't we see that this morning in Proverbs 9? The fear of the Lord is the beginning to wisdom. And oftentimes we talk about wisdom being the application of knowledge. It's where you know something and then you do that, right? What starts that? The fear of the Lord. It doesn't end that. That's the starting point. As you can see with these nations and with Israel and with Judah, they feared Him. But they didn't do. They didn't obey Him. And so I have to ask the question, do I live to please Him only? See, they all saw Him as important. They all saw Him as a God that needed to be revered. But He was not the only one to keep happy. See, because we had to keep Molech happy. We had to keep Chemosh happy. We have to keep Dagon happy. We have to keep all these other gods happy because they are one and the same. That's not the way it was, is it? Does that person truly know God? They do not know Jehovah. Because Jehovah is a jealous God, as He says to them when He made that covenant on Mount Sinai. He is a consuming fire. And the New Testament makes sure that we understand that He has not changed from that. That we've come to a mountain even greater than Mount Sinai. We've come to Mount Zion, the city of the mountain, the city of the innumerable host in heaven. That's crazy. And He says, man, you think it was bad there. It is a terrifying thing, He says in that chapter of Hebrews 12, to fall into the hands of the living God. You see, not all gods are the same. Not all religions are the same. And the danger is that if I'm not only living my life to please Him, I'm going to have influence on people, aren't I? I'm learning this like every single day. Y'all know this. Y'all say it to me all the time, right? So in the last year, I've got a little shadow around. We even match today, don't we? Like, you know these things intellectually. But until you see that, it doesn't have quite the same impact. And now you think about that a lot more of, yes, I want Him to be like me in this, but I don't want Him to be like me in this. So you know what that means I have to be in this area that I want Him to be like me? I got to be different in that area. Which may mean that's hard to do. Because maybe I've done that for a really long time. Man, isn't that what God did with His people? Didn't they commit sin for a long time and He would send the prophets time after time after time to say, hey, don't go this route, don't go this route, come back over here. And what characterized if they were righteous or wicked was how they took that, didn't it? They either would listen or they would not listen. You understand that as it pointed out all throughout with Israel, that they did as their fathers did. And with the nations, who does it say they were like? Their children and their children's children. The way in which I live my life says more than about what I tell my children about my life. It also says more than what I tell my brothers and my sisters about my life. It also says more than what I tell my coworkers and my friends about my life. I might teach them to fear Jehovah, to come to church, to love God with all their heart, with all their soul, and all their mind. But if I'm also serving the God of sports, or the God of music, or the God of you name it, guess who sees that? Children. Those that we influence. And guess what they say? It's okay to say and to know these things and give it over here the same way, doesn't it? And guess what they're going to do? More than likely, they're going to do the exact same thing I do. That's what happened with Israel and with the nations. They knew better. They just didn't walk wholly after the Lord. Their God. It's not about what we know. It's about what we do. And we got serious influence over others, and we got to double check and make sure that our influence is what it should be on those in which we influence, on whom we influence. We good with that? Maybe tonight you're ready to be baptized into Jesus as Alexis was this morning for the forgiveness of your sins. Or maybe you need the prayers of the congregation here. Why don't you come now as we stand and as we sing.